expected Labour to be, frankly, this bad this quick. And that has left a vacuum that Kemi is now trying to fill and articulating something that has been known for a while and needs the Conservatives to accept that they played along with for too long, which is that we are living beyond our means. This situation is simply unsustainable.
Is she going to be more truthful?
Because we like being nasty. Well, she's already said, I am going to tell people the truth, whether it's popular or not. And it is the truth that this is fiscally unsustainable. You cannot keep having a welfare bill that balloons. When it's decades ago that our tax receipts do not cover everything that the state is trying to provide, in which case you just have to keep borrowing more. It's not sustainable, and it's got to the point where the ugly, difficult message has got to be the one that says, we can't keep doing this.
All right.
Because the fact is, you can help some children who are in poverty now, or you can saddle all children with a debt crisis.
Right, well, on that unhappy note, I'm going to end it, but thank you very much to Giles Dillnott and Rachel Cunliffe. It's all we have time for at Times at One. Fee Glover and Jane Garvey are here next.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you very much, Joe. Good afternoon. 2 o'clock, you're listening to Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
And coming up in the next 2 hours, we will get our verdicts on the budget from figures in small business, defence, hospitality and education. As Rachel Reason says she hasn't broken her promise not to put up income tax, we're going to talk more about trust in politics. There is news beyond all of that too. Can you roll back the years by having your blood washed, like that Simon Cowell has just done? And our big interview is with the Happy Valley and Riot Women creator, Sally Wainwright.
Yeah, so don't all rush off now and get your blood washed. Stick around, please, if you can. Here's the news at 2, Tom Noonan.
Good afternoon, Jane. Thank you. The Prime Minister has told Times Radio ending the two-child benefit cap in the budget is not a last-minute measure designed to shore up his own position. Sir Keir Starmer insists he's always wanted to do it, and it's not about keeping Labour MPs happy.
We've got hundreds of thousands of children living in poverty. In modern-day Britain, three-quarters of the families that they're living in are working families. This is the working poor in 2025 in Britain. We're putting an end to that.
The Prime Minister also says tax rises through freezing income tax thresholds are not to fund higher welfare spending, but to improve schools and hospitals. Net migration fell to 204,000 people in the year to June, down 69% on the year before. That's the lowest numbers since 2021. Dr. Peter Walsh, a senior researcher at Oxford University's Migration Observatory, says he's surprised.
Honestly, this is more than I anticipated, despite these quite tough restrictions introduced by their Conservative government. This was a bigger fall than I expected. But remember, it also climbed to really unprecedented levels in the post-Brexit period. Three times what it was in the pre-Brexit period. Well, now it looks like we've essentially returned to those pre-Brexit levels.
Figures also suggest the number of asylum seekers living in hotels has risen by a quarter since Labour took office. Nearly 36,300 people were put up in them at the end of September. That was up 13% on June. Vladimir Putin says Donald Trump's proposals can be used as the basis for a peace deal for Ukraine. The Russian president says the US envoy Steve Witkoff is heading back to Moscow for talks, but he's also attacked sanctions against Russian oil companies, saying they're damaging relations with Washington, D.C. A man who threw a six-year-old French boy off the Tate Modern in London has been found guilty of attacking two female nurses at a high-security psychiatric hospital. It's the second time Jonty Bravery has been convicted of attacking staff at Broadmoor Hospital in Berkshire. He's serving a life sentence for throwing the child from a 10th-floor balcony in 2019. At least 65 people are now reported to be dead because of a fire which swept through multiple tower blocks in Hong Kong. More than 70 people are injured and hundreds others are missing. The Pope has warned about the world being in a new period of global conflict on his first foreign trip since being elected.
We are now experiencing a phase marked by heightened level of conflict on the global level, fueled by prevailing strategies of economic and military power. This is enabling what Pope Francis called a third world war fought piecemeal. We must in no way give in to this. The future of humanity is at stake.
Leo XIV is in Turkey, fulfilling a promise made by his predecessor, Pope Francis. He'll also travel to Lebanon as part of this trip. And Emmanuel Macron has announced a new voluntary military service for teenagers. The French president says he wants 10,000 18 and 19-year-olds to sign up by 2030. He says they will only be deployed to the French mainland and overseas territories. For a news bulletin, when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing podcast.
Across the UK, on DAB, online, and on your smart speaker, Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms.
Well, a very good afternoon to you. It's 4 minutes past two. It's Jane and Fee with you until 4 o'clock this afternoon. Don't worry, we didn't go somewhere together yesterday. We just did knitting in separate houses. We're going to talk about the budget today, though. We're going to concentrate on reaction from small businesses, the repercussions of lifting the two-child benefit cap, and post-budget reaction from hospitality and the care sector as well. If you've got any thoughts, particularly if you're from all of those places, we would love to hear from you. 0333 003 2353. If you're running a small business and you've put off making decisions in order to concentrate on what the Chancellor has told you to do, it was a very long run-up, wasn't it? And quite possibly a little bit painful for you if your margins aren't that great. So we would love to know what yesterday meant to you and whether or not you can still fulfil all of those obligations and all of that potential. Simon Cowell is ageing backwards. That's what he wants to do anyway. He's had his blood removed and cleaned and then popped back in. Does that give you the yuck factor rather than the X factor? It's Thursday. It's the best that I can do. We'll talk about that in the next hour of the programme. Jane Mulcairns and I have got matching outfits on today. Will it make a difference to her tease of what's in the Saturday magazine? I like to think so. We're going to hear about Nikki Haslam's Common Guide to Christmas and also why Dr. Hannah Fry might be the coolest mathematician since Pythagoras.
Yes. Nikki Haslam pops up. He's seasonal, isn't he, Nikki?
Well, his tea towel is just about available for the Christmas season. Right. He's also launched a single, so we can dance around the Christmas tree. A little bit common to have one. And listen to his, I think it's somewhere between dance and rap. So much to look forward to, Jane.
Yes, Nikki Haslam. He's now 86, I noticed.
So. He likes a Primark athleisure tracksuit. He says they're very well made.
A bold choice. I wasn't necessarily expecting him to be rocking that look, but he does it pretty effectively. And our big guest after 3:30 is Sally Wainwright, the creator of so much incredibly successful and memorable drama, Happy Valley, and Gentleman Jack and Scott and Bailey. That was one of hers as well. Actually, so much success. So many great, great series, loved by many millions. And her new one is Riot Women, all six episodes still available on the iPlayer. It's about, loosely speaking, five menopausal women who form a rock band, punk band. But there's so, so much more to it than that. And one of the accusations that she has faced from viewers who have otherwise really enjoyed the series is that she struggles to write positive male characters. Well, I ask her about that, and she answers it. And I think it's fair to say she's quite robust in her response to that suggestion.
Will our male listenership enjoy the after 3:30 interview, Jane?
Well, I hope so, because Sally is, she's probably the most successful screenwriter Britain has produced in the last decade, 15 years, I would imagine. And do you know where she started? You'll love this. The Archers.
I don't listen to The Archers. It gives me the ick. Can I just tell you a little bit more about Nikki Haslam's Christmas? Because it does entertain us. So he likes a fake tree. The interviewer asks, what about the rest of us? He stipulates garlands of hand-harvested ivy draped across picture frames, mantelpieces and windowsills. That's a toughie, isn't it, if you've just got a couple of posters on your wall and no mantelpiece. No holly, because the red berries are too showy. I always pick them off. You don't need colour at Christmas, says Nikki. White lights, no,
not flashing ones either. Baubles on trees only, and they must come from Russia. The Russians make the best Christmas decorations. Might be slightly out of step with the rest of the world politically at the moment. The most read stories on the Times website this afternoon are all about the budget. In at number three, Paul Johnson on Rachel Reeves showing us that she has no strategy. The former head of the Institute for Fiscal Studies isn't impressed. He says the Chancellor's tax rises suggest no sense of direction except for on welfare, where it is all going backwards for Labour. The second most read story, Budget 2025 latest. We've kept manifesto promises, Starmer says. The Prime Minister admits we've asked everybody to make a contribution, but insists that extra tax revenue is needed for the NHS and for schools. And the most read piece on the Times website, Mansion Tax could drag 190,000 homeowners into financial ruin. The OBR says the surcharge could raise £600 million in 5 years' time, but it may be seen as a granny tax for the asset rich and cash poor. You can read all of those articles on thetimes.com. The coverage of the budget and what it means to you is exceptional. You'll need your digital subscription. You can use all the calculators. You can find out what it means. If you don't have one, get one. Go to thetimes.com/subscribe. Get involved if you want to this afternoon on 0333 003 2353. We love hearing from you. Ping us a WhatsApp. Tell us how you're feeling, Britain. Tell us.
Okay, you went into your very caring, compassionate, slightly croaky voice there.
Don't believe a word of it.
Yes, come closer. Feel the warmth. There are fears from businesses that the Chancellor's scattergun approach to the budget will fail to deliver the government's promised growth agenda. The government has outlined 9 ways it says yesterday's budget is actually backing British business. Last year, we heard from Sam Dimond, owner of Spotlight Sound, a small business in Essex, for his reaction to the Chancellor's first budget.
Not great. I mean, national insurance is kind of the big one for us. We suspected it was coming and it's here. So an increase in national insurance for us is not good news. I thought it was quite interesting, really. In her opening remarks, Rachel Reeves said that she was there, you know, they're there to support small businesses and SMEs on one hand. And then the national insurance and the increase in the minimum wage is the biggest thing to affect SMEs. SMEs account for 3/5 of employment in the private sector. So I think it's going to be difficult for a lot of people.
Well, that was Sam last year. And by magic, Sam joins us again now. Very happy 2025 budget day to you, Sam. How are you feeling?
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me back. Well, I think it's another fairly anti-business budget again. Much like we said last time, they come and ask for £40 billion worth of taxes last year, and they've come back for nearly £30 billion again this year. A lot, I feel, were aimed at small businesses.
Right, talk us through exactly what it's going to mean to you, Sam. Which bits of your business will be immediately affected? And do let us know also if there are any glimmers of hope for you.
Yeah, I think another big national minimum wage increase is difficult. It's, you know, the government doesn't pay for this. Small businesses do. That puts prices of things up. I think that's going to affect a large number of our customers as a supplier. That's really going to affect their profits and how much they can then invest and grow their businesses. And this is the problem. These sorts of rises don't promote business, they don't promote growth, and they don't promote getting people into work.
One of the 9 things listed on the government website as promising for business owners such as yourself is that the Chancellor is maintaining the lowest corporation rate in the G7. Are you thankful at least for that?
I guess so. That could have been another one that went up. I think there's some hope. There's some good points around apprenticeships and maybe getting some younger people into work. That could be quite promising. I think there needs to be more support and help around how that really works, how that's delivered, and how we can really kind of drive that forward. So that was a good news story. I think fuel duty being held as well, you know, at least until September next year, is also quite good news. That at least isn't another tax that has gone up.
And if you could wave a magic wand, Sam, what would you have wanted to have heard yesterday?
I think we've got to get people working. We've got there's got to be an incentive for business owners for SMEs to grow, and I think that's not what we're seeing. I think we need some support to actually employ people and to push forward. That's what's really going to drive the economy and drive growth.
And what about the crossover areas? Now you're the owner of Spotlight Sound. Just tell us a little bit about exactly what the business does.
Yes, we do event production, technical events and AV installation into venues. So a lot of our clients in installation are hospitality clients. So a big sector that's hit with the national insurance and the minimum wage. So that's a big effect. And for events, I think where we do a lot of corporate events, a lot of award shows and gala dinners, the instability and the waiting and the unsure of what this budget has been, all the leaks that have happened have created such an instability that people haven't been able to kind of move forward and push into what they want to do.
Sure. And in terms of crossover areas, you could be one of those businesses where putting AI and new technology in would be a good thing. You would definitely be one of those businesses where making a transition to green energy might be something that a government would be able to help you with. And actually, those kind of things, they weren't predominant in yesterday's budget, were they?
No, I think it's the green issue maybe around vehicles and things we've pushed on before is that the technology, the vehicles just aren't there to do what we need them to do. And now we're starting a mileage sort of tax on those as well. We've not seen any sort of green eco and grants and things that have been there previously as well. So perhaps that we're moving away from that.
Yeah. And just tell us about your feelings looking ahead to the next financial year, Sam, because so much of a business like yours is about you. It's about you having confidence. You're the one who's going to have to, you know, take the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. So how do you feel?
Very stressed. It's a lot of pressure. We've got a team, we've got staff, we've got people to pay. They've got mortgages and families to look after. And I think we've got to keep driving the business forward. We've got to keep doing what we're doing, playing within this new set of rules to try and make sure that we have got a business and we have got a place for people to come to work. Because that's what's proving more and more difficult.
Yeah. And Sam, are you affected by the mansion tax? Are you the owner of a £5 million property?
Unfortunately not, no. That tax I have got away from. So, okay. Yeah, no mansion tax for me.
Right. Well, that's a glimmer of light there, isn't it? Sam, it's lovely of you to join us. It is the nice note to end on. Sam, thank you very much indeed. Maybe you'll allow us to get in touch with you around the same time next year and we will talk through budget number 3. That's Sam Dimond, owner of Spotlight Sound, a small business in Essex. There for your hospitality and gala dinner needs.
Indeed. Right, I did ask how you were feeling and you have told us. So the minimum wage should not have been increased, says Anonymous with a question mark. Do give us your name. It's always much better when we know your name. Nick says, good afternoon. After voting Labour, I'm now feeling lost. Why do hard-working people need to fund those that don't want to work and those that have more children than they can afford? I think it's irresponsible. Another contributor, the world of the think tank is so far removed from the real world. This is, I'm going to say, it's a robust opinion. A handout to the feckless might help the parents, but the idea it pushes their children to a better place is rubbish. They'll get a new telly, a new phone, beer and fags. That's where the uncapped benefit extra goes in the real world, says our jaundiced contributor. We are talking about that particular area of the budget, the two-child benefit cap, after 2:30 this afternoon. But let's bring in Dr. Chris Moss, who has quite the CV. He owns a number of pubs in the Kendal area. He also has a company called Westmoreland Home Care, one of Cumbria's leading home care services. And I think you're a doctor in A&E, Chris. Good afternoon to you.
A very good afternoon, yes. I wear many different hats.
You must be absolutely exhausted. Let's focus then on your pub business to start with. What about the increase in the minimum wage then?
Yeah, well, I think it's really interesting. And I'm all for developing minimum wages because, again, that really helps for younger people to get on in life. It is really complicated when you look at that in a sector that has a lot of lower-end rate staff, and that's not just going to have an impact on the minimum wage for them. It basically pushes all the salaries up, because there's obviously a very small difference between the minimum wage staff to the supervisors, to the managers, and to moving forward. And so that's going to have a huge knock-on effect next year when it comes to looking at actually the cost of the service provided. And I think the thing with the pub and the hospitality sector is there's only so far that people will go to actually fund it. And we're already seeing the issues with pubs and restaurants closing down right up and down the country. This is going to put more pressure onto the service. And we've seen this year with the raise in minimum wage, we've had to really manage our staffing, which means we employ less people. So I don't think it's really a budget to really develop the economy in a way of increasing jobs, because we have reduced our jobs in order to manage the budget responsibility when it comes to the minimum wage and the NI that has come in this year and again is going to come in next year as well.
Okay, and all that applies presumably in your home care business as well, does it?
Yeah, so the home care, we're one of the UK's leading home care providers, and we've taken a very different stance to that. We have none of our staff are on minimum wage. They're extremely well paid because it's a highly skilled sector, and we know that to deliver really good quality care, actually you need to pay for it. And home care is able to do that, so it doesn't affect home care services. But there's a lot of sectors that do a lot of council contracts and social services contracts where it will have a huge impact. And I think that's one of the things that, again, we seem to skirt around within the economy. We do need to really think about how we're going to manage health and social care in this country. In the next 10 years, there's going to be an extra 5 million people that need looking after. That's obviously going to be a lot of job creation, but there's a huge amount of cost that is going to be involved in that. And I think really the government needs to take some really bold steps when they look at community and look at how we manage and bring on local towns right up and down the country, in the fact that it's not just going to be about e-commerce. We've got to really make sure that these towns survive. And I think with AI and all these things in the background potentially coming on, I think there needs to be a much bigger thing on e-commerce to look at a sort of competitive market when it comes to sort of small communities right up and down the country.
Right. What do you mean by a competitive market? Just explain a bit about that.
Well, I think it's interesting when you look at the bigger companies, the online e-commerce companies, they operate in a way that they don't have business rates. There's not so many overheads. So actually, when you look at smaller villages and smaller towns, we can see shops and smaller areas closing up and down the country because it's all going online, which is fine. And that's maybe the way it's going. But I think we then have to have discussion about what it is we want from our communities, in the fact that do we want to have towns that are derelict because it's all gone onto e-commerce, or are we going to really invest in service provision? Are we going to incentivize towns and businesses setting up? There's very few businesses that are wanting to take on new leases because it's hideously expensive, and it's far cheaper to run an e-commerce business than it is in the center of town. I get the argument that people will say, actually, maybe that's the way society's going, but I think it's really important that we do have services within the community, because actually at the end of the day, community is about interaction and connecting with people. That might not necessarily be about shops, but it would be about keeping those central communities going up and down the country.
I think you're also somebody who wants there to be at least a proper conversation about the price we're all paying for Brexit. And with the exception of the Liberal Democrats, and I think some other parties, in all fairness, it still isn't cropping up, is it?
No, and I think we're not having these big discussions. You know, when you look at over the last 5 years and what's happened with the economy, I do wonder whether all of this is coming down to Brexit, and actually do we need to have some far bigger conversations about the issues of Brexit? And I know from our point of view, whenever we're bringing stuff in and out of Europe, the paperwork and the red tape is hugely complex. And I think what government don't necessarily realise is those small to medium companies right up and down the country that employ the majority of the workforce. And actually this budget is making it exceedingly difficult. We need to have ability for growth. We need to ensure that we've got plenty of employment. And we need to be facing some of these really big, challenging questions, such as health, such as the issues around potential AI and the significant job losses in the next 5 to 10 years. And I think that's something that is not really discussed much. You know, I know people in the retail and white collar sector that are absolutely terrified of AI and what that potentially will do to jobs. And I think we need to have a much greater discussion, because that's going to have a huge impact on the economy in the next 5 to 10 years.
OK, just a brief message from a listener listener who says, well done, Rachel. The next government is now assured to be reform. She's rewarding non-working and punishing workers. Congratulations. It's a jaundiced view from Simon, although he's probably not alone. Do you have any reason for optimism at all?
Well, do you know, I'm really optimistic, and life is very short, and we do have to have inner joy and see the best in society. I am extremely concerned, though, with the way things are going. And if you look at what reform are doing, that unless we have a really good offer from the Liberal Democrats and the Greens, then I think we're going to end up in a really problematic place. And I think you're seeing some MPs that have already checked out. And I think that is really, really concerning. You know, we've obviously only a year into this particular parliament, but we are going to have massive problems. And we do need to really have these open conversations. I mean, look what's happened to America. And the worry is that could happen in the UK. And despite being very positive, that would be a catastrophe for UK and UK economy.
Okay, thank you very much. The thoughts of Chris Moss, who runs a number of pubs in the Kendal area, and also one of the directors of Westmoreland Home Care. Simon Cowell's blood cleaning is where we're going to go next. It's a bit like when you use the rinse and drain setting on your washing machine, except it's your blood. It is 23 minutes past two. Jane and Fionn, Times Radio with Wix, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms.
Kate Borsay on Times Radio.
As the dust settles on the budget and the figures are compiled, we'll pick out the biggest takeaways with the leading economist Neil Shearing. We'll speak to a pollster about what voters make of it all. Will Vladimir Zelensky interrupt Donald Trump's Thanksgiving holiday in Mar-a-Lago to sign a peace plan to take to Russia? We'll keep a keen eye on that for you. And on our panel to look at the biggest stories of the day, the journalist Rebecca Reid and Jack Sellers, the former advisor to Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak.
Kate Borsay, tonight from 7 on Times Radio.
Here's to the moment, to the places that give you perspective and the people that change that perspective. The curiosity that leads you to the edge of the earth and the joy that meets you there. Celebrate Black Friday with Silver Sea. Enjoy savings of up to £8,000 per suite on expedition voyages and up to £5,000 per suite on classic voyages. Book your sailing between November 11th and December 2nd, 2025 at silversea.com. Here's to having every reason to celebrate, to finding more. Terms and conditions apply. Selected voyages. For full terms and conditions, visit silversea.com/Black Friday.
With the Hotel Chocolat Black Friday event now on, you can save 15% when you spend £35. Get a head start on Christmas with imaginative gifts and traditions with a chocolate twist. From reefs you can nibble to colossal crackers bursting with chocolate, ready to enchant every festive guest. Shop in-store and online at Hotel Chocolat. But hurry, the Black Friday event ends soon. T's and C's apply. Selected items are limited time only. Excludes Velvetizer.
This Christmas, McDonald's and the Elf on the Shelf are bringing festive tasks to your little ones, like writing a Christmas card for your postie.
Thank you. You're one happy helper.
Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 30th of December, from 11 a.m, includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last, subject to availability, fair ordering policy applies.
The Furniture Village Black Friday Sale. Huge savings on sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. But hurry, it ends Monday.
Download the free Times Radio app from the App Store or Google Play today.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens and Bathrooms. Choose from thousands of products. Wix have options to suit every budget. Plus, with great offers now on, it's the perfect time to start planning your new kitchen or bathroom. Find your nearest showroom at wix.co.uk.
Simon Cowell claims he's aging backwards by washing his own blood. The process is called apheresis and it involves taking out, rinsing and filtering blood before returning it back to the body. And by doing that, you're hoping to remove metals, chemicals and microplastics. Kate Spicer, who writes for The Times, has tried the process herself. A very good afternoon, Kate. What happened and how was it?
Well, first of all, there's few other things it filters out. It's not just the kind of heavy metals and whatnot that we take in from the environment. It also removes cytokines and things that we create in our own body that might cause autoimmunity. So the applications are pretty wide. It's not just about keeping Simon Cowell fit and healthy. Anyway, yes, I did try it. I tried it a few weeks ago at a clinic in London for very, very rich people. And I'm not very, very rich. And I just lay there with a pin going in one arm, a needle going in one arm, needle going out the other, and it removes your blood, splits it in two, filters the plasma, which is obviously the liquid that moves the blood cells through the body, and then rewarms it like soup and returns it to your body and the blood cells. That is one type of apheresis. And then there's another type that's very, very popular in America and is starting to appear here, called TPE, which is total plasma exchange, where they split your blood, the apheresis thing. They split your blood and then they dump all the plasma and put artificial plasma in.
Okay. Do you know what I really loved was your addition of like soup in your explanation of what happens when they warm it.
Plasma is like a river, right?
No, absolutely. And you wouldn't want cold stuff going back into your body. It wouldn't work at all.
No, and you don't want the sort of metaphorical shopping trolleys either.
No, exactly. But Kate, is there any clinical evidence that if you don't have some kind of an illness or disease where apheresis is necessary, that you are making yourself any healthier by doing this?
So when we look at scientific evidence, obviously there's various sort of, you know, there's levels of its certainty, if you like, and the evidence for apheresis medically in the context of, you know, serious illnesses is very, very, very good. And it's also very, very safe. But for well-being, there's very little. It's a hunch, really. There's a guy in America at the Buck Institute who's also monetized this into a business. He's found evidence that he's tried it on a few humans and found that their biological aging reduces by 2.5 years after apheresis. And that's what kind of longevity people are obsessed by, reducing your biological age, which I've read the piece in The Sun and Simon Cowell talks about that. Yeah. I'm aging backwards, he says. But in short, no, there's not a lot of evidence. It's pretty experimental for well-being and it's pretty experimental for preventative medicine. The evidence is definitely there for existing disease, for certain cancers and... It's widely used in the NHS for, I think, 38 diseases.
Clinical conditions,
yeah.
Didn't it make you actually feel a tad unwell, though, Kate?
Well, I have to be fair to the procedure. I think I had a bug that week because I didn't feel great when I went in, and either it made me feel not very good because it removes a lot of proteins and good things from your body while it's also removing bad things through the very sort of posh sieves that it used for functioning. Or I could have been much more ill, but by filtering my plasma, we removed a lot of the virus. You can remove viruses with these filters and all sorts of things. Or it possibly stop me from getting really ill. I mean, I've got my nephew living with me at the moment. He's an extremely fit 15-year-old, and I'm a 56-year-old lady. And that same bug laid him super low, and I was kind of basically fine. So I don't want to blame how I felt on the apheresis because it's a correlation. Yeah. Not a cause.
I really enjoyed reading your piece, and everybody can read it if they go to thetimes.com. I really like the fact at the end, Kate, where a clinician says, actually, if you go and give blood and they're taking 300 millilitres of your blood out of you, your body's natural response to that is to make new blood, and that in itself will give you a cleansing effect.
Exactly. And then she does very wittily say afterwards that if she was bleeding out on the operating table, she would have taken even my very toxic blood. But the fact is, giving blood is one of the few ways you can mimic the effects of apheresis, which is currently either available if you're very sick or if you're very, very rich, as is often the way. So most of us won't be able to afford to go to any of these private clinics offering apheresis, but we can give blood. And it's so exciting to know that you not only get a free biscuit, and potentially save someone's life, but you also clean up your blood.
Yeah, and the blood transfusion service needs people more than ever, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Let's all do that. It's a cheap way of doing a Simon Cowell. Kate, we're out of time, but it's lovely to talk to you. And it's such an interesting piece. I learned so much from reading it. So if you just pop in Kate Spicer into The Times, you'll be able to read about her blood filtering experiences.
Will says, Simon Cowell sucked the very lifeblood out of original music. One has to ask if he was suffering from irony deficiency. Very good indeed. Matt says, why can't these youngsters stick with the tried and tested traditional practices like vampirism? This is woke nonsense, says Matt in Nottingham. Excellent. Right, OK. Next, we are going to talk about the two-child benefit cap being scrapped. You're with Times Radio. Let's get the latest headlines. Just after 2:30, Tom Noonan.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon. The Prime Minister has told Times Radio he has long wanted to remove the two-child benefit cap, and he's dismissed the idea it was a last-minute measure in the budget to win over Labour MPs. Sir Keir Starmer's also defended tax rises people will face as a result of frozen income tax thresholds, saying they will pay for better schools and hospitals. The Shadow Chancellor, Sir Mel Stride, says the Conservatives would do things differently.
What we need to do, and what we would do, is get on top of government spending, particularly welfare spending, get the benefits bill down so we can get taxes down and get people feeling better off as a consequence.
Net migration fell 69% to 204,000 people in the year to June. The Office for National Statistics credited changes under the Conservative government with fewer non-EU nationals arriving for work and study. Vladimir Putin says Donald Trump's proposals can form the basis for future agreements for peace in Ukraine. However, the Russian president's also called Ukraine's leadership illegitimate and said it's senseless to sign anything with them. And officials in Washington, D.C. say the two National Guardsmen shot at point-blank range are in a critical condition. The 29-year-old man who's been arrested is an Afghan national. Donald Trump has suspended all immigration requests for Afghans. Don't forget, you can set the Times News Briefing as your news service on Alexa.
This is Times Radio.
Dreaming of somewhere extraordinary? This Black Friday, escape to the Maldives with the Turquoise Holiday Company, who are offering an exclusive 50% discount on an unforgettable stay at five-star Six Senses Lamu. Spend 7 nights in an overwater villa with half-board flights and seaplane transfers included, all surrounded by endless turquoise seas. But hurry, this exclusive offer ends at 5 p.m. on Monday the 1st of December. Search Turquoise Holidays Black Friday and turn Black Friday turquoise. Terms and conditions apply.
Looking to grow your investments and generate a long-term income? The Scottish American Investment Company, also known as SAINTS, could help. SAINTS has been investing for over 150 years and focuses on growing capital as well as income by investing in a diverse range of companies from around the world. SAINTS is managed by Bailey Gifford, manager for some of the UK's best-known investment trusts. Find out key information and more at baileygifford.com. As with any investment, capital is at risk and income is not guaranteed.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house,
and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly.
To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms. Wickes local design experts are ready to help. Whether you start with an in-store design consultation or with a free home measure, it's completely up to you. Find out more about the free design service at wickes.co.uk.
John Pienaar takes over from us at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Hi guys. So Lisa Nandy is coming on at about 5 o'clock, and I'll be talking to her about a few things. Obviously, the budget, and in particular, I suppose, among other things, the scrapping of the two-child benefit cap. Now, Lisa Nandy is one of those who are often described as soft left, and we all know what that means now. And I've no doubt she was very happy to hear what the Chancellor said about that yesterday, as were so many Labour MPs. It's going to be a split, this, in opinion, in the country isn't it? There are going to be people who think, look, I'm having to pay more tax. And a lot of people think of it as basically I'm paying more tax to help people get more in benefits. And there's resentment about that. I'm not just talking about, you know, well-off people. I'm talking about a lot of Labour voters in constituencies, I imagine, like Wigan, Lisa Nandy's constituency. So I'll get her thoughts on all of that, as well as mansion taxes. You know, there'll be, I suppose, a lot of people in Wigan are not going to be mourning people paying more tax if they've got a £2 million house in London. But let's get our views on things like that as well. And also, the Chancellor getting a hard time for not putting more in the budget to grow the economy. Now, look, you can argue the budget wasn't about growing the economy, but you could also argue, why wasn't it? Why wasn't it more about that? So I'll talk to the Phone for You billionaire John Caldwell, who's coming on the show as well as Paul Johnson, you know, the fiscal guru, about tax reform, because I heard Helen Lewis on Breakfast saying that some reform in tax could provide an enormous amount of money. I'd just like to hear a bit more about that. I'll talk about Ukraine, I'll talk about migration, those figures that you were talking about a bit earlier on, and other things too.
So reforming tax how? I mean,
Helen Lewis's point was that changing the tax code to help business in a way that they're not being helped now. Maybe it's too complex. These things could just do a bit more for business, making money easy for them. And it suggested making an awful lot more money. Now, like you, I want to know what could be done that could yield that kind of harvest.
Interesting. OK, John, thank you very much. John Pienaar, live on Times Radio between 4 o'clock and 7. So let's go back to one of the things John was talking about there, the decision to scrap the two-child benefit cap. This policy was initially brought in by the Conservatives back in 2017, and it meant that parents could only claim universal credit or tax credit for their first two children. So here is Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer defending that budget decision.
I have repeatedly said that I want my government to drive down child poverty. That is a political mission. It is a personal mission. I don't want hundreds of thousands of children in this country living in poverty. I think it's abhorrent. And I'm really proud that yesterday was the day that this government lifted 500,000, half a million children out of poverty. It's a very good thing for those children.
That's Sir Keir Starmer, of course. Well, Rebecca Leake is Executive Director of the Suffolk Primary Head Teachers Association and author of a book called The School Ready Governor. I'm told, Rebecca, you've been a primary school head three times. Is that correct?
That is correct. I have been, yes.
Right.
For my sake.
And would that always have been in the Suffolk area?
Yes, all three in Suffolk, in the county of Suffolk.
Okay, so it's not the poorest part of the UK, but I imagine that you did have pupils whose families were up against it.
Well, there's deprivation everywhere. I was a head teacher in Ipswich, and you only need to look a little bit into that town to find out that there's definitely levels of deprivation there. I've also worked in worked in London, I've worked in Brent, and there is deprivation. And the impact on families is very considerable, and we see it on the front line in schools. Often we complain that we're not included in policy making, we who work in schools, because we see it on the front line. So when things like safeguarding bills are looked at and things like that, we're often frustrated that they're not coming to head teachers and educators, because we see what happens to families that are really struggling.
OK, so tell us, what do you see?
Well, this two-child cap is a really interesting one. It's so sticky, isn't it? Because essentially, it's direct. Where the pain is felt on the child the most, in that there may be some long-term benefits that somebody has worked out, and there's a bit of research now, isn't there, into that, and that has it incentivized mothers to go back to work and that kind of thing. But the very real immediate impact is felt on families and on the children in larger families. And so we have definitely seen over the last 5 years or so that families with a number of children in their family that are already struggle more, that's for sure.
And these children turn up to school in some cases, hungry and frankly not that interested in learning?
Yeah, there's a number of ways that I would say we see directly the impact. And obviously we don't know what other impacts there are, because we can't see everything. But definitely hungry. And then we have children who end up taking on more of the care burden, because maybe the family are so stretched, and so the older siblings are running around trying to get the, you know, the bus, which already is a cost, and they're getting their younger children to school, the younger siblings to school. So the older children are impacted with what they're having to do. Hunger, clothes, social involvement, they can't afford to go to things, tired and stressed. I would say we see that in a tangible way.
OK. Can you just answer the question that some listeners are posing this afternoon? Why do people have three or more children if they can't afford them? And it's a not unreasonable question.
It isn't an unreasonable question. And there are some people that have been trying to research, because obviously, as you said, this came in 2017. And has it had an impact on decision making of people, you know, or shall we have another one? And it looks like that there isn't very much of an impact. It's not actually affecting decision making. You know, when those two people go, shall we have another child? They don't look at the spreadsheet of benefits. And so in terms of the tax acting as that kind of deterrent, I'm not sure that there's very strong evidence. I don't know why people have children. I certainly can't answer that. I'm not them. Why do people have more children? You know, we like having children, don't we? Some people come from large families. They're used to being in large families. So they want to have a number of children. One thing that is very interesting, and I say I've definitely seen it, and very specific examples that are quite heartbreaking, actually, are when circumstances change. And I think that there does need to be a tax and benefit system that supports, you know, say a family that they've had four children, and then one of the parents gets chronically ill, and the other parent can't go to work. And that's where you've seen, I have seen on a couple of very specific occasions how difficult it is for those families. So there needs to be a net for those. Right. And the two cap has been really difficult for those kinds of circumstances.
And what do you say about those people who do really feel quite exercised by this, about this? And do you detect in them a lack of compassion, or simply a lack of understanding of what real life is like for lots of people?
I would just simply say that I don't know. You know, I'm just a head teacher, in that I can tell you what the impact is at school, and what we would like to see as educators, and what would be great for us to see as educators, is well-fed and happy children that can come to school from really grounded families. And if a little bit more cash is going to immediately help, and obviously tax, it's complicated, isn't it? Because you have an immediate impact in putting a little bit more cash in pockets on a weekly basis. Or do we look at the long-term picture and try and incentivise people to get back to work? You know, it's that constant push and pull. And I would say I want children, you know, we shouldn't be punishing children who are already coming, often from very stretched families, and they're the ones that are feeling the pain of this policy. And so let's not punish them, and let's look at something that doesn't directly punish the children, if that makes sense.
And of course the parents are actually more often than not in work.
Well, there's a very interesting argument, I think, as well, around women. This is a tax policy that I think has, you know, really been difficult for women, single mothers, or say a mother that wants to go back to work and having to juggle the cost of, well, if I do that, will I get the childcare? And often it is the mother that is feeling the strain in this scenario. Of course, if there's a father and a mother living together and the dad's out at work, and, you know, I'm sure they're working really hard as well. But there's definitely been an impact on women, choices about work, whether they can manage it. Therefore, they do go to work, and then the family is more stretched, and then the woman often still continues to take on the domestic burden at home, because that is still what happens traditionally. And so the impact of this policy, I think, has probably had sharp teeth for women.
Can we just talk about yesterday's budget, in the sense that it didn't contain an increase in overall school revenue funding? What sort of pressures are schools in Suffolk currently under?
Well, there's a very specific area that's a real strain in a county like Suffolk. There are lots of strains, but one in particular is very small rural schools. And we have rural schools at the end of the line, where there are maybe fluctuating pupil numbers, because, you know, a whole couple of families might move into the village, and then 5 years later there are fewer children. And then do we close the school or do we keep it open? And because of the way the school funding is managed, these schools can really struggle over years, and some of them are closed, which is then really detrimental for that community, because then it's not going to attract families to live there, which then means that, you know, farmers or whatever, you know, rural industry is really affected. So the strain on small schools is particularly sharply felt, and the way the funding model works for small schools can be a real challenge. That is definite. The other cost, you know, is people. We cost so much money, teachers. Staff, and we are constantly battling the budgets to try and staff our schools in a healthy way, you know, to make sure that there are enough teachers and teaching assistants in the classrooms, and that is our greatest strain on our budget. And we're all setting deficit budgets often because there just isn't enough. There just isn't enough to add up to you know, to there aren't enough teachers and teaching assistants often in schools, and we're having to make cuts everywhere.
Can I just make this one final point from a listener? Because these comments just keep coming, and I appreciate that you're not here to take all these comments, but you are here, so you're good at it. Your guest just says, I don't know. Some people just want a large family. Well, I'd like a large car, says Philip. I'd quite like a better... Sorry, the message has just slipped down the screen. Bear with. Hang on one second.
Well, Philip, Philip, I totally agree. I know we should be making good decisions about our lives. And no, we can't all have everything. All my three children would really like a new iPhone at Christmas, you know, of the latest model, and they're not getting it. And so, yes, but fundamentally, if a family does have a child, do we stand by and watch, or do we put some extra cash into that family's pocket? You know, because we don't want the child to suffer. That's the moral dilemma, isn't it? And yes, there should be lots of incentives to get people into work. There should be better childcare, you know, all these kinds of things so that we can help people work and feel really productive. But fundamentally, if a child is born, look, I sound like it's Christmas already. But if a child is born, then we want to look after them. That's the thing.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. Rebecca Leake, Executive Director of the Suffolk Primary Head Teachers Association.
Thank you for all of your messages this afternoon. I'm going to read two that came in consecutively. The first one is from Jonathan, and it goes right back to the beginning of the show when I spoke to Sam Dimond, small business owner. I get the joking about mansion tax, but it's not £5 million houses, it's £2 million. In London, that can be a small four-bedroom terrace bought from a salary that is already very heavily taxed. It's the politics of envy. It's a tax on hard work, prudence, and providing for your family. It's socialism. Well, you're absolutely right, Jonathan. There are two bands, though, aren't there? There is a £2 million and above council tax addition that is coming in, and there is a £5 million mansion tax. I think that's at £7,500 for properties worth over £5 million. And the council tax, those highest three bands, will probably have added on somewhere around £2,500 going to central government. The next message is from Peter. Red blood cells have a life of 120 days. They turn over in the liver every day. It's why poo is brown. Washing them is a waste of time. Thank you for those. 0333.
Concentrates the mind, doesn't it?
003-2353.
Lovely. Coming up, our inside look at the Times Mag ahead of the weekend. La Malkerins is lurking outside. I'm just ignoring her. It's Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix. Book your free design appointment at wix.co.uk.
Friday nights on Times Radio with Visit Dubai. Every Friday night from 7, join Times Radio for an adventure through the latest global news, politics, philosophy, entertainment and the arts. Exploring the stories beyond the headlines and taking a light-hearted look at all the weekend's cultural highlights at home and abroad. Friday night on Times Radio with Visit Dubai. What's not to love? Start your journey at visitdubai.com.
The Story, the award-winning daily news podcast from The Times. Listen in the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Furniture Village Black Friday Sale. Huge savings on sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. But hurry, it ends Monday.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 4.5% AER variable. That includes a 2% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that once-in-a-lifetime adventure. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18-plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.41% gross. Terms apply.
Think about cheese. Make your thoughts cheesier. Now add 100% chicken breast fillet, chipotle sauce and a mega cheese melt. And it's giving the new cheesy chicken stack at McDonald's. Did we mention it's cheesy?
Cheese.
Available until the 4th of Jan 2026 from 11am. Price and participation may vary. Subject to availability.
Dreaming of somewhere extraordinary? This Black Friday, escape to the Maldives with the Turquoise Holiday Company, who are offering an exclusive 50% discount on an unforgettable stay at five-star Six Senses Lamu. Spend 7 nights in an overwater villa with half-board flights and seaplane transfers included, all surrounded by endless turquoise seas. But hurry, this exclusive offer ends at 5pm on Monday the 1st of December. Search Turquoise Holidays Black Friday and turn Black Friday turquoise. Terms and conditions apply.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Well, Karen's is here, so you've got, what do you think yours is? Because I think mine's a... yours is more...
I'm a wild zebra. Right?
You are a wild zebra.
Yeah, I'm...
Ladies and gentlemen.
Cantering across the canteen like a... Yeah.
Yep, she so is. She's one of those. It's always difficult on radio when you start talking about what we're wearing. Let's talk about what's in the Saturday magazine.
Let's do that. On the cover, what a babe. Hannah Fry, 41, Britain's coolest mathematician. There's so much.
Is it a crowded field?
There's Carol Vorderman.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And Simon Rachel, Singh. Rachel, what's Rachel's?
Riley.
Riley, thank you, everyone. How do you want you there? Felix in my ear. Riley. There's quite a few cool mathematicians.
Yeah.
But anyway, for this issue, Hannah's the coolest.
She
is phenomenally clever and also has a great media career now on telly, on radio. She's also got probably the best put down ever when anyone, usually a man, just have to say, questions her credentials. She just drops in that she's got a PhD in fluid dynamics, she says. It's if you want to end up, or you want your child to end up like Hannah Fry, according to this interview, you can take a tip from her mother's textbook. It's made me feel really sorry for a young Hannah Fry, that her mum, whose Catholicism taught her that life is pain, made her work her way through a page of a textbook every day of a summer holiday.
Yeah,
that's what it takes to be the coolest mathematician. Yeah. But anyway, it's a really good interview by Andrew Billen. She talks a lot about her career, being a woman in maths and science. Also about the fact that she got diagnosed with cervical cancer at 36, which she fully recovered from, but really interestingly was sort of the impetus for her divorce. She sort of talks about how it gave her a different perspective on life. And she thinks that it's not a coincidence that she then split up with her husband. But then she's met a new partner and she met him on Hinge, but she doesn't think that Hinge is actually a very good way to meet people because the algorithms work against you. And she subscribes to the, she calls it the 36% theory. It's also called, I know other love coaches and experts call it the optimal stop theory or the secretary problem, which is basically if you take 100 candidates, by the time you get to number 37, you've probably found the best one, so you should stop. So according to that theory, when you're about 24 and dating, you should just marry the next one.
Do you think that there are areas of our lives that should not be entirely governed by mathematics?
I mean, Fee, I could do with any area of my life being governed by mathematics. There's no maths whatsoever, including in my tax returns. So, you know.
I was fascinated to read Hannah Fry's take
on love
yeah. when you use maths. But I'm sure I'm not the only one shouting at the radio going, but what if you're number 38? And number 38 is gorgeous.
Well, that's what she says, that her first husband was number 38. She said Phil came along at exactly 38%. And she said, but the thing is, it only works 37% of the time, so it mostly doesn't work. I think it's just one of those things. I know, there's too many numbers already. I guess the idea is it's all chaos. So, you know, you can try to sort of apply some maths to it, which might make it feel less chaotic. But I can't think of anything that applies to any rules of maths less than attraction. It doesn't make sense, any of it.
No. Nothing makes sense.
No.
She is amazing, Hannah Fry.
She really is.
Fairness. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't
it? And she looks great on the cover in a red jumpsuit.
She looks beautiful and slightly kind of Santa-ish as well as we head into the festive season with Nikki Haslam. Now, this is an interview that Simon Mills has done. And, I mean, you just can't get enough of Nikki Haslam. He's just such a contrarian.
Well, yeah, I mean, talk about someone who's never subscribed to the maths or rules of anything, Nikki Haslam. He's 86. 86 years old. It's really interesting. I mean, his mum His mother's godmother was Queen Victoria, which is just extraordinary to think about. And he's been around for basically the whole of contemporary culture, you know, hanging out with the Stones and the Beatles and introducing, you know, Yves Saint Laurent to Diana Vreeland. It's just kind of mad,
what
his
was
life.
His job?
Being extremely fashionable,
that
I imagine. Yeah.
He's done interior design.
He has done interior design
for
some very big names. Rod Stewart and Brian Ferry, Ringo Starr. But he also has now got this kind of new life as a, you know, quote unquote, tastemaker. So he has this annual tea towel about what's common and naff. And this year, apparently, it's Clapping the Chef, Kilner Jars and Sunblock. Also, Stephen Fry. Poor and Stephen. And Anne McElvoy's opinions.
McElvoy,
sorry. Rupert Everett apparently contributed death threats. And last year, Jeremy Clarkson offered the poor man's dilemma of needing house keys. So, yeah, he's got his tea towel. But he's also got an album. I mean, he's very productive for an 86-year-old.
Now, did you manage to track down the music and have a listen to it?
It's certainly not on Spotify yet, Fee.
Okay.
I'll say that.
Okay.
But apparently it does exist.
Do we know what genre he's performing in?
Yeah, so apparently it's kind of cabaret style, but with sort of piano, violin and voice stripped back. Tunes by Kurt Vile, Irving Berlin, Rodgers and Hart, Cole Porter, apparently intimate, elegiac, and he can hit the high C's when needed.
Right.
So I'll definitely be trying to find it.
Do you know what? I'm surprised he does that, because I would have thought that's very common to be able to sing very, very high.
Oh, no, apparently hitting a high C is hard.
No, we were
talking about John Bon Jovi the other week. Like he struggled with hitting the high C's that he did early in his career. So I think 86, a high C is probably a great achievement. Anyway, it's a brilliant, brilliant read, Nikki Haslam with Simon Mills. And yeah, he's met everybody, including seven US presidents. And there's an anecdote, which I definitely can't repeat on radio, about when Ivana Trump, Donald Trump's first wife, was given a seat at dinner for a Queen Mother next to John Profumo, who propositioned her with a very rude question. So you have to read.
The man who was supposed to have saved himself by doing good works.
Yes.
He was actually a bit fruity at a dinner.
So says Nikki Haslam. Mm. And who would I be to doubt it?
Do you know, I really also had to have a think about Jeremy Clarkson's punting of the needing house keys, the poor man's dilemma.
Yeah.
So that's because you just have staff? Because why would anyone...
Oh, I thought it might maybe that you live somewhere so posh there was no burglars. But it could just be that you've got a housekeeper, you're right.
Somewhere so posh that being burglars. Good Lord, don't ever, ever accept the job on Crime Watch. It's just illogical.
I never thought of you as one of life's innocents, Jane. Right, I've just been told that Nikki Haslam is going to be on Times Radio next week, interviewed by Ed Vasey.
Oh, good Lord, that's appointment listening, isn't it?
What a treat. What a treat.
Between them, they know everything that's common.
Yes.
I'm amazed that Ed Vasey's not on the tea towel, to be honest.
Next year.
Lovely to see you, Jane Mulkerins.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
3 o'clock, good afternoon to you. It's Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio. In the next hour, Rachel Reeves and Keir Starmer say they haven't broken their promise not to put up income tax. Not everyone agrees. We'll talk about what that means for our trust in politicians. Defence does feel like one of the budget afterthoughts. We'll hear from the Times defence editor about what she made of it. And our big interview is with the creator of Happy Valley and now Riot Women, Sally Wainwright. Here's the news at 3, Tom Noonan.
Thank you, Jane. Good afternoon. The Prime Minister has told Times Radio ending the two-child benefit cap in the budget was not put in place to please his own MPs. Sir Keir Starmer insists the measure has been long planned and is not about his own political position.
Before the election and after the election, I don't know how many times Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor, and I have said we are determined to drive down child poverty. This is not anything new. We are really proud that the last Labour government drove down child poverty, and I've spoken about that many, many times. And I've said that the government that I lead and that Rachel is the Chancellor in will drive down child poverty.
The Prime Minister also insists higher taxes will go towards paying for better hospitals and schools rather than for the higher welfare spending estimated because of the budget. A seventh person has been arrested in connection with the terrorist attack on the Heaton Park synagogue in Manchester. Two men were killed when Jihad al-Shami drove his car into the gates. He then attacked people with a knife before being shot dead. A 31-year-old was arrested today on suspicion of preparing for an act of terrorism. Net migration fell 69% in the year to June to 204,000 people. However, a record number of people claimed asylum in the UK in the year to September, 110,000. Dr. Peter Walsh from the Migration Observatory at the University of Oxford says that is costing the government £3 billion a year.
Lower migration is not necessarily bad for the economy. What matters really is the composition. And so what we're seeing now is that asylum claims are continuing to rise. Asylum seekers making up 44% of net migration. And we know asylum seekers, they're not permitted to work. They do reflect a substantial net fiscal negative for the government.
The Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood has taken the credit for the figures, but the Office for National Statistics says measures under the last Conservative government have led to the fall in immigration. Vladimir Putin says Donald Trump's proposals can be used as the basis for a peace deal in Ukraine. The Russian president says the US envoy Steve Witkoff is heading back to Moscow for talks. However, he's also labelled Ukraine's government illegitimate and said it's senseless signing anything with it. Officials in Washington, D.C. say the man arrested over the shooting of two members of the National Guard worked with U.S. forces in Afghanistan. They say the Afghan man arrived as part of a resettlement program in the wake of the U.S. withdrawal in 2021. U.S. Attorney for D.C., Republican Jeanine Pirro, explicitly blamed Joe Biden's presidency.
We should not have to live in fear in the nation's capital, especially by one who came here from a foreign country. Through a process that was so absurd that he came through and released into this country, as many were, knowing virtually nothing about his vetting.
Donald Trump has suspended all immigration requests for Afghan nationals. National Guardsman Sarah Beckstrom, who's 20, and 24-year-old Andrew Wolf are in a critical condition after being shot at point-blank range. And at least 65 people are now reported to be dead because of a fire which swept through multiple tower blocks in Hong Kong. More than 70 people are injured. Hundreds of others are missing. For a news bulletin, when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing podcast.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker,
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens and Bathrooms.
It's 4 minutes past three. Thank you for all your texts and messages this afternoon. We will pack the programme with them, I absolutely promise. In this half an hour, we'll talk about defence spending as well. And after 3:30, Jane has done an interview with
Sally Wainwright. Sorry, I was away from the microphone, actually lunging at my easy peeler there, so I take it all back. Apologies, not very professional. Sally Wainwright is our guest after 3:30, creator of hit TV shows and also an amazing drama on the BBC about the Bronte sisters, the name of which I was just trying to find it on the screen there because an early WhatsApper this afternoon said, please reference that because it is brilliant. That was on TV, I think, maybe about 3 or 4 years ago. I'll find it. But also Happy Valley was her big one, Gentleman Jack, Scott and Bailey. To Walk Invisible was the name of the Brontes. Thank you, Felix is so on it today. That was the name of the Brontes drama. And Riot Women is her new show on the BBC. It's on the iPlayer now. 6 episodes, lots of drama and lots of what you might call female-facing activity.
We've also been discussing on the podcast where the term easy peeler comes from. Jane thinks that it is in the same category as calling that citrus fruit a satsuma or a clementine. I think it's just the motion you're using to unwrap a clementine or a satsuma. If anybody can put us out of our misery, I'd be very grateful. It's 0333 003 2353. Right, to important news now. The Prime Minister has defended the tax rises announced in yesterday's budget. Times Radio's political editor, Anna Michalova, has been talking to both Keir Starmer and the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves. She asked if we're seeing a return to a high tax, high spend Labour Party.
We are at a Labour government that has put fairness at the heart of the budget. And yes, we've asked everybody to make a contribution, but that is so that we can protect our NHS, so that it's there for people when they need it and their families when they need it. Secondly, to put money into our schools so that every child can go as far as their talent will take them. And thirdly, to allow us to bear down on what is, I think, probably the single most important issue for most families, which is the cost of living. We'd already done a number of measures before the budget, but in the budget yesterday, Rachel here, the Chancellor, was able to confirm that rail fares would be capped. That's the first time in 30 years that's happened, that prescription charges would be capped, hugely important for people who need prescriptions, but also that we can reduce energy bills by, on average, £150 for every household. And for particularly poor households, that's 6 million, that's on top of the £150 discount that we'd already put in place. At this time of year, as we go into winter, that will make a material difference to families across the country, some of whom will be worrying about whether they can put their heating on or whether they can put it on to the level that they really want, because this is a huge anxiety. And so to be able to take that off for all families as an average is hugely important to us. Rachel, do you want to?
Yes, we managed to keep the contribution that ordinary people pay as low as possible by things like introducing the gambling tax on remote, on online gambling, a council tax surcharge on properties worth more than £2 million, increasing the tax by 2 percentage points on income from renting out property and dividends. And those things were important so that we have a fair system and we close the tax loopholes that exist and use that money
to ensure
that...
But Charles, there's not any growth. We're not actually growing the economy.
Well, wait a second. The OBR said in the spring that our economy would grow by 1% this year. They revised it up yesterday to 1.5%. And that follows upward revisions by the IMF, the OECD and the Bank of England. The forecasts for the future are forecasts, and I am determined to beat them, because the Conservative legacy is not Britain's destiny. That's why we're signing trade deals with the US, with India, with the EU. It's why we've ripped up the planning rules. It's why we are getting rid of unnecessary regulation, reforming the pension system. That's why we had a big package yesterday to back British entrepreneurs, because I want businesses to start up and scale and stay in Britain. And that's why we're changing some of the tax incentives to really support those fast-growing businesses to raise finance, create jobs here in Britain.
Prime Minister, do you feel anything for those middle-class families who are not on benefits, who are going to be sucked into paying a lot more income tax, whose pension contributions are going to be hit, who will be hit by a lot more than the £150 annual giveaway? Do you feel anything for those families?
We are asking everybody to make a contribution. But that contribution goes essentially to protecting our public services and our NHS. And I think wherever you are across the country, almost everyone will say, I want an NHS that really is fit for purpose and it is there for me and my family when I need it. And they know that wasn't the case under the last government. And they're looking to us to fix it, and quite right too. Secondly, I think there'll be general consensus that children should be able to go as far as their talents will take them in life. That can't happen if you don't have a school system that is properly funded. It wasn't properly funded under the last government. It falls to us to do that. I think across the country, people would say the single biggest issue is the cost of living. And therefore, they are saying to the government, what are you doing to help me with the cost of living? What we announced yesterday was £150 off energy bills for all households. So that's every household, on average, £150. So it doesn't matter what income bracket you're in for that. That applies across all households. For particularly poor households, the 6 million or so, that's on top of the 150 we've already put in place. But we've also taken the opportunity to revise and change and make the tax system more fair. So one of the taxes that was introduced yesterday was an online gambling tax. And I think people would say it's right that you've altered the tax system to make sure that it's a fairer system, notwithstanding that I acknowledge we are asking everybody to make a contribution.
But do you feel sorry for those families who are going to feel squeezed?
Look, I want a country that people feel proud to be in, and I think people will only be proud if their NHS is working properly, if they know they've got an education system where children go as far as their talents will take them, and where they know that they've got a government bearing down on child poverty. We've got hundreds of thousands of children living in poverty in modern-day Britain.
Three quarters of the families that they're living in are working families. This is the working poor in 2025 in Britain. We're putting an end to that.
Well, that's the Prime Minister and the Chancellor speaking to Times Radio's political editor, Anna Mikhailova. Rachel Reeves has denied breaking Labour's manifesto pledge not to raise income tax, but her freeze to the threshold at which you pay certain rates of income tax is going to push 940,000 workers into paying 40% of tax on their income. Think tanks like the Institute for Fiscal Studies say the Chancellor has broken her promise. And this is what we wanted to talk about for the next 15 minutes or so, what this means for public trust in our politicians. Only 11% of people trust politicians to tell the truth, compared to 94% for nurses and, hands up to this, 27% for journalists. So we need to acknowledge quite a low bar that you're all leaping across to listen to the next 14 minutes of radio. Let's welcome Lord Hayward, Robert Hayward, pollster and Conservative peer. Very good afternoon from us. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Good afternoon. I'm interested that journalists, which I expected, are trusted more than twice as much as politicians. And that's the way you should phrase it.
Yes, well, I didn't want to big up our own profession ahead of introducing the low level of yours. But I wonder whether you think that most people are waking up this morning with the first thought, oh, my goodness, there's been a manifesto pledge breach here. Or might we actually be in a place, Lord Hayward, where we're a little bit beyond relying on politicians to do what they say they're going to do?
Please call me Robert, by the way, but they're waking up and dealing with their experience and expectation in relation to tax. Where they don't believe politicians. Historically, politicians have always been, with estate agents, at the bottom of any poll in terms of people that you actually believe. Unfortunately, politicians allow themselves to get into an aspect of semantics rather than just saying yes, but, which is what the vast majority of the population would actually like politicians to do and say.
Sure. And I think it's a very good thing to acknowledge, isn't it? So why do you think that so many politicians still want to stick to a script that actually nobody else is really bothering with anymore?
I really don't know. And it's what's striking is that the politicians that people generally like are the ones that actually play to individual concerns and give direct answers. And that's why, whether it be in this country in terms of populists, you've got people like Nigel Farage and Polanski who are attracting very strong support, because in general they tend to give very direct answers to questions that you and others put to.
And that can be so dangerous, can't it? Because also what it means is that you can really say pretty much anything you like in answer to a question, untried and untested, because, you know, that background isn't one of belief and trust and, I suppose, deference as well.
Yes, and I think we're not talking about something that's new here. As I indicated, polls have always put politicians low, but I think it's fair to say that over the last decade, it's not just the current Prime Minister and the current Chancellor. If you look at the public reaction to, for example, Boris Johnson's comments in relation to Partygate and all the rest of it, that's the sort of thing that drove public esteem of politicians down to an even lower level than it used to be. There's no question that this is not something that's new, that's recent. It has been developing quite noticeably over the last decade.
And do you think that given enough time, this country would get back to a place where they can distinguish between politicians who have let the country down through scandal and politicians who have changed tack and let people down because they have believed that they can bring something politically to the table and simply haven't been able to do it? Those are two very different things, aren't they?
Incredibly different. And I would like to think that we could go back to that set of circumstances you just outlined. I fear that in this era of social media, brief messaging, that what politicians fear is that unless they actually get the positive bit of their message out first, then it will get lost. And therefore, I fear that we won't get politicians saying, yes, I have changed tack, and here's the reason. Because they're scared that journalists will not allow them to get in the, here's the reason.
Sure. That's interesting, though, Robert, because in fact, Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor, in her I'm delivering you a bad message over your Cheerios speech, as Kemi Badenoch has now termed it, the government was doing the exact opposite of what you suggested. It was actually trying to say to all of us, here's all the doom, here's all the gloom, this is all the bad news, it's how it's going to be. And I think many people therefore rather hope that in the budget would come a little bit of, you know, the sunlit uplands.
You're absolutely right. And the problem is that the Chancellor did, as you say, wake us all up or talk at us over breakfast the other day, telling us how ghastly everything was going to be. And then suddenly, 3 or 4 days later, she said, well, actually, it's not going to be that ghastly. And then came the budget, and they altered not the rates, but the thresholds. And this is the where you get the cynicism from the public, is that even where you get a politician trying to roll the ground, get a message across and explain at length why they're going to have to do something, they then change their mind, say they're not going to have to do it because figures say that circumstances weren't quite as bad as we thought, which in fact has now been denied by the OBR. But then you finish up with a changed set of figures, which as you and other journalists, I don't know about yourselves, but other journalists are putting to the Chancellor and to the Prime Minister, is in fact a U-turn, a change of policy.
Yeah. A big philosophical question for you to end on then. If the age of deference is over, and I think we all accept that it is really, and if this template that you and I have known during our lifetimes of what's expected of politicians has changed, what happens next?
I think it has, as you say, changed dramatically, and it's not changed solely in relation to politicians, for example. Another event that has caught the public's eye in recent weeks is BBC. And when I was a lot younger, you would defer automatically to the BBC and to a whole series of other institutions, the police and the like. And it's going to be very, very difficult ever to get back to anything like that, purely because social media is so immediate, so fast and so brief that I'm not convinced that we will be able to get back all of what we had before. But I would hope that we could get some of it back. And that would be by particularly politicians being more direct, more honest, more open.
Thank you for joining us, Lord Hayward. Robert Hayward is a pollster and Conservative peer. We'd love your thoughts on that. What does happen next? In 30 or 40 years' time, if cynicism had depleted the turnout at a general election to, I don't know, Jane, 25% of the population, 20% of the population, so an overwhelming majority of people were no longer involved in the democratic process, you just couldn't expect people to then carry out the wishes of the government of the day. What is that?
Can we just talk about citrus fruit? Do you mind?
No, I was trying to engage you in a philosophical
debate.
It's
such a depressing prospect that sometimes I'm grateful I'm in my dotage because I won't be around to witness some of the horrors that no doubt lie ahead. God, that's cheered everybody up, hasn't it? Victoria says, easy peelers, pathetic. Dumbing down of a proper name irritates me in every single supermarket. You see, this is from Matthew. Why isn't anybody asking Starmer about funding his first duty? Defence is on its knees and only coins being invested. Well, we're about to get on to that, Matthew. Another listener says, if they're so concerned about the working poor, why are we all subsidising businesses via high taxes to pay low salaries? Yes, that's a point. And what else? Can we just, Neil says, I feel for Neil. Can we just stop talking about the budget? I never thought I'd say this. Can we talk about the former Prince Andrew?
or even the BBC. Okay, Neil.
Lord Hayward did mention the BBC there, so yes. I hope that that was a little frisson of appeal for you, Neil. Yeah.
So it's defence spending next here on Times Radio. Jane and Fee with Wix, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms.
Ed Vasey on Times Radio, reviewing the week in politics from Westminster and beyond.
This is the kind of most interesting thing, I guess, about what is going on in British politics at the moment.
The daily political debrief with a difference.
Oh no, more crypto commie pro-Labour Vasey.
Plus a peerless lineup of guests and commentators.
He, like me, and indeed like most of our listeners, is a bit of a political junkie.
Ed Vasey, tomorrow morning from 10 on Times Radio.
Life's like a photo album. Mine bring back so many memories. That's a street party on VE Day. Me, 3 years old. Oh, here's me, 17, teddy boy. Our wedding. Didn't my Shirley look lovely? Holiday in Devon when the boys were small. They tower over me now. Oh, now these are the more recent ones on my phone. Oh, that's me and Kate enjoying a game of cards. She's my care professional from home instead. Kind, funny, and very good at gin rummy. Since Shirley passed away, Kate comes to the house most days to help with the things I can't manage so well now. She's great company. I mean, the boys visit me most weekends, but they can't be here all the time, so home instead have really helped. I have the best quality care, but in my own home, from Kate. She's wonderful. Though she will have to let me win at cards now and again.
For award-winning home care you can trust, go to homeinstead.co.uk.
The Hilton sale is now on, and thankfully it doesn't sound like this. Instead, our sale sounds a bit more like this.
Welcome back.
With a warm welcome, spacious rooms, central locations, and up to 20% off your stay. You can swap chaos for comfort this winter. Book now at hilton.com. Hilton. For the stay. Offer subject to availability across participating hotels. Terms and conditions apply.
Visit Times Radio on YouTube for the latest videos and interviews.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens. There's over 80 stunning styles to choose from and great offers too, including the Spend and Save with up to 50% off kitchen units. Terms and minimum spend apply. Find out more at wix.co.uk.
If you are a keen reader, you might like to become part of the Off Air, that's the podcast, Off Air with Jane and Fee, book club, which we do, is it every sort of 3 months, something like that, the book club?
Something like that.
And we're convening tomorrow for a look at Patti Smith's memoir, Just Kids. And fortunately, we have the assistance, and it's very welcome assistance, of Laura Hackett, who is the Times and Sunday Times deputy literary editor. She read the book along with us and along with many of you, and we've had loads of brilliant emails on that. So that is Patti Smith's Just Kids in the Off Air with Jane and Fee book club podcast, available tomorrow. Hope that's clear. Now, defence looks to be a bit of a loser from the budget, with spending predicted to be lower next year than set out in the spending review. There have already been questions about when the UK will spend 3% of its GDP on defence and whether we're truly ready for a conflict. Those questions over the UK's commitment to its military come as the French reopens its national service scheme, although we should say it is voluntary. Larissa Brown is the Times defence editor. So what are the defence chiefs likely to be making of what was said or perhaps not said yesterday, Larissa?
I think one of the big problems at the moment is that the government has announced new money for defence in the coming years, but the department isn't going to get that money in the next 2 years. And so what that means is all of the senior military chiefs are looking at what they can do over the next couple of years. There's a lot of pressure on them to modernise the armed forces. We've had this strategic defence review, which sets out the path to doing that. And yet they haven't got the cash to do that at the moment. And, you know, we hear all this rhetoric from the politicians about rising threats from Russia and about being prepared and moving to this war footing. But there just simply isn't the cash to modernise the armed forces at the moment, and that's worrying for people.
Yes, you say it's worrying for people. Is it one of the issues most frequently referenced by the average voter? I'm afraid, to be honest, it isn't. I'm not saying it shouldn't be, but on the whole, it isn't.
Yes, and perhaps I should have been more explicit, I suppose, by people. I mean, the people that I speak to, you know, inside the Ministry of Defence and places. And no, you're right. The average voter probably isn't that concerned about it. And that's one of the things that the government has said that it wants to do more generally, is have this national conversation with the public about those threats and about the need to spend money on defence. But this is completely ridiculous in some way, because we aren't allowed to interview any of the chiefs at the moment. There's been this unprecedented gagging of all of military officers. And so actually, how can you have that conversation with the public about the need for spending on defence if you're not allowing the military officers in charge to communicate the need for it with the population?
Well, I mean, it's more than a hint that they wouldn't have anything very positive to say.
Well, no, they probably won't, because it is at the moment just negative story after negative story when it comes to the readiness of the armed forces, the capability of the military, you know, the size of the army. It's quite a bleak picture. And, you know, there are concerns that if Russia does continue to ramp up its, testing of NATO and drone flights, then we aren't going to be equipped to deal with that.
And the story this week about the Ajax armoured fighting vehicle, tank to most of us, this is very dispiriting as well. The number of soldiers who felt really ill after spending, 10 or 11 hours in these things.
It's really alarming, that the whole Ajax story. You know, we've been covering this for years now. 2021 was when the issues became obvious, and they've still not sorted out the problems. And this Ajax vehicle is part of the army's plans to modernise the force and have an armoured division, you know, capable of being sent to war if necessary. And at the moment, all of the Ajax vehicles have been grounded. As you mentioned, 31 soldiers over the weekend had fell ill after travelling on the Ajax, after trialling it at Salisbury Plain, and you know, people were leaving the vehicles vomiting. Others were shaking so badly they couldn't control their bodies. I mean, it's just, you know, it's awful to read.
Well, it is. It's absolutely appalling. Who would hear that and think, oh, I really will encourage one of my children to join up? That sounds absolutely fabulous. Has anything been said in public, or is there can nobody talk about this either?
In terms of Ajax, we've heard from Luke Pollard. He's the minister in charge for defence readiness. He told us a few weeks ago that Ajax was safe and it was ready to be deployed, ready for operations. Issues were firmly in the past. And then we revealed just the day after that actually there'd been issues with the vehicle in the summer. And then again, you know, we've had this incident over the weekend. I don't want to tell you too much now, but we will have another story on the Times website later this evening about Ajax. But there's clearly a lot of questions that the MOD needs to answer about who knew what, when, why did Pollard say that it was safe when clearly the soldiers are still suffering. And I think this is a scandal that's just going to run and run.
It's really, really depressing stuff, right? Well, we'll look out for that article coming on thetimes.com later on tonight. The peace talks between Russia, Ukraine, obviously involving the US, and all this talk potentially of the coalition of the willing having to get involved, it just doesn't sound as though we're in the right place to take part in any future activity. What do you think?
No, I think that, first of all, I can't even envisage a scenario where we would actually end up deploying troops to Ukraine at the moment. I just don't think we're going to get there anytime soon. I keep writing this story about what it would look like. But you know, it's the same story every week, really. In terms of the actual capability of us deploying troops, we could deploy a few thousand. But, you know, nothing significant. The Ukrainians at one point were talking about potentially, you know, 100,000 troops from Europe. That's just not realistic. And actually, Britain is one of the bolder countries that has said that we want to deploy troops on the ground in Ukraine. Initially, this looked like we might be guarding key sites and ports and cities, but now this has been watered down significantly. And if anything, we would be carrying out a training mission there. But we've all struggled to persuade a lot of the European countries to take part in that. The French are willing, but many of the others aren't. And so I just can't see any of this getting off the ground.
Right, OK. And the French have got this voluntary national service scheme, which Macron has just announced. Again, we're nowhere near doing that here, are we?
No, I mean, the government, you talk about what they need to do to, you know, get the public engaged and increase the numbers to the armed forces. They are looking at trying to persuade gap year students to taste a life in the military, and also doing apprentices and other ways to get youngsters involved. But no, in terms of anything like the French are doing, we're not seeing that yet. And maybe that will change. Maybe the government will think that's a good idea.
Thank you very much, Larissa. That's certainly concentrated the mind, a bit depressing. Janet says, I care about defence. I spoke to my MP on the doorstep before the last election about it. Dan Jarvis, who's a defence minister, she says, I'm worried about it and think the Chancellor should have used the increase in tax for defence rather than putting more into benefits and the welfare state. Well, that's a view. Thank you for that, Janet. And Larissa Brown was the Times Defence, still is, the Times Defence editor.
Let's squeeze in a couple of your messages before we get to the bulletin. I'll read them fast, I promise. This one regarding politicians and truth. I listen to PMQs every week, and no matter what question Starmer is asked, he has the same answer to them all. He blames the last government for everything and never answers the questions. Maybe we would like to hear the answers, but a lack of an answer just means we trust them less. And Matt says the corollary of most people not believing politicians is that we're not surprised or shocked when they do things they promised not to, like, say, raising taxes when it was obvious that they'd had to. It's really only the media who are clutching their pearls about politicians' perfidiousness. What a great use of that word, Matt. 0333 003 2353. Quick one from Mark, who says social care wasn't even mentioned. You're right, Mark, it wasn't. You're listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wickes, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms. We are a little late to the news. Our apologies. Here's Tom Noonan.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Thank you, Fee. Good afternoon. Sir Keir Starmer has told Times Radio lifting the two-child benefit cap was not an act of party management as he defends the budget. The Prime Minister says he's long waited to make that change and he defended tax rises as necessary to improve public services. Louise Hellam is Chief Economist at Business Group, the CBI. She says the budget did not make big moves to boost growth.
There were some specific measures that we did definitely welcome. Particularly, we were calling for more planners to see unblocking in the system. And actually, the government have done some interesting things around their procurement regime, which should support innovation across the economy. So there are some pieces in there in the budget, but not some of those big game-changing moves that we wanted to see.
Asylum claims hit a record high in the year to September, 110,000. It means asylum seekers made up 44% of net migration. A man's been arrested over the Heaton Park synagogue attack after arriving at Manchester Airport earlier today. The 31-year-old is the seventh person to be detained on suspicion of preparing acts of terrorism. Vladimir Putin says Donald Trump's proposals can form the basis for future agreements for peace in Ukraine. However, the Russian president has also called Ukraine's leadership illegitimate and says it's senseless to sign anything with them. And officials in Washington, D.C. say the man arrested over the shooting of two National Guardsmen worked with U.S. forces in Afghanistan. The federal government has suspended processing all immigration requests for Afghans as a result. Don't forget, you can set the Times news briefing as your news service on Alexa.
This is Times Radio.
I'm Adam Vaughan, Environment Editor at The Times. And in Planet Hope, we meet the people tackling our biggest environmental and scientific challenges. From saving penguins in Patagonia to helping people with paralysis to move again. These are stories of science, courage and hope. Follow Planet Hope wherever you get your podcasts. Planet Hope is brought to you by The Times in paid partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative.
Dreaming of somewhere extraordinary? This Black Friday, escape to the Maldives with the Turquoise Holiday Company, who are offering an exclusive 50% discount on an unforgettable stay at five-star Six Senses Lamu. Spend 7 nights in an overwater villa with half-board flights and seaplane transfers included, all surrounded by endless turquoise seas. But hurry, this exclusive offer ends at 5 p.m. on Monday the 1st of December. Search Turquoise Holidays Black Friday and turn Black Friday turquoise. Terms and conditions apply.
Add water to your will. And know that from that single drop, life will grow. Communities will flourish. A better world will be left. By leaving a gift in your will to WaterAid, you'll help bring essential clean water to people who need it, to change their own lives for generations to come. Add WaterAid to your will. Search WaterAid Legacy to find out how.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. Looking for inspiration for your new kitchen? Let Wix help you find brilliant kitchen ideas. Browse the Wix Kitchen Gallery or try the Matchmaker tool to find a style that suits you. Find the gallery and matchmaker at wix.co.uk.
24 minutes to 4 o'clock, Times Radio. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover here until 4. Sally Wainwright is the wildly successful creator of top telly like Happy Valley, Gentleman Jack, Scott and Bailey and Last Tango in Halifax. She really does have a truly stellar record. But when I spoke to her this morning, it has to be said that she was wrapped up in a fleece and a thick scarf because her boiler had gone and she was waiting for a plumber. But her TV shows are gritty, they're troubling, they're funny, they're human, they are full of characters you recognise and experiences you've probably lived through yourself. Her latest series, Riot Women, has been another hit. Viewers have lapped up the tale of a group of menopausal women forming a punk band. But there is more to it than that, and while many people have loved every minute, some have asked why Sally appears to struggle to write positive male characters. As you'll hear, Sally is a bit tired of that question and has an answer for it. I asked Sally whether there'd been a gap between Happy Valley and writing Riot Women.
Oh, not much at all. I mean, I was starting to work on this about 10 years ago when I was just finished writing the second series of Happy Valley. So I started thinking about it. The idea of writing about women who are basically the same age I was at the time, I was like early 50s, who start a punk rock band. And it was about conflating that, the idea of a punk rock band with, because I'd always wanted to write about a female rock band since I was little, and conflating that idea with just some of the things I was going through at the time, which... It wasn't just about the menopause. It was about the kind of things that I felt I was dealing with at the age I was at. So I had teenage boys. My mum had started to be forgetful in a way that meant I was starting to have to do things like having to do her online shopping for her.
Yeah, yeah.
She lived 200 miles away in Bridlington and starting to realise that she was a very clever, smart woman and starting to realise that she just really wasn't on top of things anymore and worrying about how I was going to deal with that. I had a lot of pressure on me at work because, you know, I was like a lot of women at that age, you're kind of at the peak of your career. You've got a reasonably successful career and people want more and more of you. And I did feel, just being pulled in lots of different directions, and lots of pressure. And I wanted to try and find a way of writing about, and the menopause starting in ways that I wasn't completely aware of, that that's exactly what it was. Because like a lot of women, I thought the menopause was just hot flushes, and I didn't realise how much more to it there was than that. Like brain fog starting to occur, you know, forgetting your calling your kids all the cats' names before you get to their names, you know.
Yeah.
I always tend to write about people who are the same age as me. No coincidence, probably.
Yeah.
Because I'm just interested in what I'm going through, basically, and trying to find a way of dramatising it.
I wonder particularly about the show Rock Follies, which I recall, vaguely from my adolescence. Mm. I'm the same age as you, but I think it was Rula Lenska, wasn't it? And
it was Julie Covington, Charlotte Cornwell, Rula Lenska, Sue Jones-David.
Right.
With the Little Ladies.
Okay, and was it in any way similar to Riot Women? Did you take inspiration from it to a degree?
I took inspiration from it, but I didn't. It's very different to Rock Follies. I mean, Rock Follies, one of the big differences was that they didn't play their own instruments, and I was really keen that my women should play their own instruments. In Rock Follies, they had these men who just popped up, and you never really quite knew who they were.
Yeah.
Which, as a child, I just bought into, and as an adult, I was like, "Why? How? What's that about then? Who are these people?" It was an inspiration. It was an inspiration because it was more trying to capture the tone of that show, which it just had this extraordinary energy about it on screen, which I think is extraordinarily hard to capture. I think there are very few shows who have a real tangible energy that of their own and you couldn't be watching any other show other than that particular show, and I think there are very, very few shows that do that. And it was the first time, age 13, I kind of felt that. It really got to me. It was like something had happened to me. It wasn't just watching the TV show.
Yeah.
It was like something had really, really happened to me, and it had. It made me age 13. I remember thinking very clearly that, oh, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to write television. I'm going to write. I don't know why write was the thing that struck me, except that I did already write. I've never stopped writing, right from when I was like a little kid writing stories.
Mm.
But I remember very clearly thinking, oh, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to write television. I'm going to write things like that. That was my hope. That was my ambition.
It is exciting. At times, it's really galvanising. It's also sometimes an absolute punch in the gut in every sense of that term. The response from our listeners has been overwhelmingly positive. But Sally, one question that has been put by a lot of people who, by the way, were emailing to the podcast about this show long before I'd watched all six episodes to tell me to watch it, was that they want a positive male character. They wanted someone male they could pin their hopes on. What do you say about that?
I say watch 95% of television if you want to watch men. It's interesting people say this. You know, look at the women, that none of them are perfect. They're interesting. The other thing to say is I've had so many criticisms. Sally Wainwright hates men. Sally Wainwright is a misandrist. You know, nobody accuses whoever wrote The Good and the Bad and the Ugly of being hating women just because there aren't any women in it. It's bonkers. It's so gendered, this criticism. You know, the show is about how women are often abused by men. So the men in the show have to be those kind of men. You know, and having said that, there are nice men in the show. Jerry's nice. The lad who lends Yvonne his guitar is nice.
Yeah.
Jojo is nice. He's just got some sexual predilections. He's a nice guy. When you meet him in episode 6, he's great. He's lovely. He's full of fun. Very odd gendered criticism, this. And I resent the fact that I hate men because I've written this drama. You know, I quite like men. I've got two sons, you know. I've got four cats and three of them are men. It's bonkers.
Yeah, you haven't chucked them out.
It's very gendered, that criticism. You wouldn't get, you know, there are so many dramas about men. And the women in them often are bland, innocuous, don't have much to say. They're often impossibly glamorous. And nobody accuses the people who write those of hating women.
I probably would, in fairness. One of the great things about Riot Women, and there are many brilliant things, is the relationship between the two sisters, played by Tamsin Gregg and Amelia Bullmore. And you have a sister, I have a sister. Can you just describe that? Because they are extraordinarily close, but there's also a lot of other stuff going on as well.
I suppose what I was trying to dramatise was the story with their mother, who Anne Reed plays, Nancy, and to show that something I've come across with a number of my friends is that when you get a parent who starts to go downhill with dementia, there tends to be one of the children who takes over and starts, you know, does something about it. And it's quite common for the other siblings to let them. And that's kind of what happened to me, which I kind of wanted to dramatise that, I suppose, between Holly and Yvonne. Again, it's just interesting human drama that, you know, we all have our ups and downs with our parents. And to be fair to my sister, her and my mum just didn't get on terribly well. So it inevitably fell to me. And it was tough, you know, it was tough to think that I didn't have much support from that department. So I kind of, that's why I chose to dramatise it like that. And what was interesting, what did come out of that was, and again, I think it's something I've tried to reflect in the show, that the people who did help me were my friends, my female friends, because a number of us were in a similar kind of position.
And what can those female friends do in these times? Is it just a question of just listening?
Where I felt very lucky with my friends was that a couple of them, these are my ex-school friends. Yeah. There's a gang of them on WhatsApp. We have our WhatsApp gang and there are eight of us. And three of the women that I was at school with are nurses, or were nurses. They're all retired now. And what I found difficult when my mum developed dementia was that there isn't much help out there. There isn't much guidance. You know, people say you've got to ring the GP. So you ring the GP and you get put, you know, you don't get to speak to the GP and this kind of thing, you know. It's very frustrating and very time consuming. And there's no clear kind of roadmap about who to go to or who to speak to or where to get the most current advice from. So it was my friend, particularly one of my friends who's a nurse, who part of her work was visiting care homes. She was like a completely brilliant source of information about how to. So you get support and that kind of thing in terms of people to talk to. But it was also really useful advice that if I hadn't known her, I'd have been really
struggling. And the amazing cast you have, including just at the very end of episode 6, a hugely famous actor playing what might appear to be a bit part. The actor is Jonathan Pryce, so there's no way, let's be honest, Sally, that he would have agreed to appear unless he thought he was onto a winner. But, I mean, you have a huge kind of, almost a family of actors. Anne Reed is just astonishing. She's never anything other than just brilliant in anything I've ever seen her in. What would you say about her? Because I don't think she's celebrated quite enough, actually.
I don't think she is. It's very odd. She should be a dame by now. Everybody I know says this, and I don't quite know why she isn't. Maybe she's turned it down. I don't know. I don't think she would, but anyway. Annie's fantastic. She's so wonderful to work with. She's got, I was saying this to someone the other day, she's got that absolute quality of realness that even the best actors don't always have. You know, it's like she just is rather than, yeah, you can't quite see her acting. You're kind of seduced into thinking, oh, that really is happening to her in that moment in a way that's actually quite rare. And it takes real skill to be able to act like that, to be able to get under the lines and inhabit them quite so authentically. I think that takes real... It takes homework. It's somebody who's really done the homework and really thought about what they're doing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she comes in to film on the day and just wears it incredibly lightly. You know, she's... the other thing about Annie, she's got a talent for friendship, I think, Annie. She's really good at... she's always keeping in touch, always inviting out for lunch and that kind of thing. And the other great thing about her, she's 90 and she's in a play on Broadway at the moment. I'm going over to see her next week. She's playing Jocasta in Oedipus, and her energy is extraordinary. She's a real sort of paradigm of can do, you know. She sort of prides herself on just saying yes, I think, to everything and doing it with great gusto and enthusiasm. And a few years ago she said, oh, I'm doing a cabaret next, are you going to come and see it? She's inspirational, actually, Annie. She makes me feel old, you know.
Oh, well, no, I did not know that she was on Broadway. I mean, that is phenomenal. Can I just read you some of the emails we've had about Riot Women? This is from Gail, who says, it is the first time I have ever felt represented on mainstream drama. It is full of humour and friendship and some serious issues, and it's about us, women. It's not about looking a certain way or about power struggles or about men dashing around. It's about us. I found it a healing experience, she says. Well, there you go.
Oh, that's nice to hear. That's wonderful. Again, that's why I do get a bit irritated by these criticisms that about the men who are in the show, because that's, you know, I'm you know, looking at women's issues, and one of the big things that I had a big conversation about when we were writing the show was how all the women in the room who were present at this storyline meeting had had some form of verbal abuse levelled at them by a man at some point in their lives. You know, it's a very common...
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about the character Graham, for instance, who I think people are often thinking about when they think I'm being horrible to men. But it's a real common thing.
Well, can I just put...
I couldn't find one woman who hadn't had some... Even me. Mm. I've had, you know, nasty sexual little snippets levelled at me. And they're horrible. You know, they don't just... It isn't water off a duck's back. They do bore into your brain and pester you for... A yeah. little while afterwards, and it's a peculiar problem that's gendered, because women don't do that.
Well, I mean, Graham is the character played by another great actor, Peter Davison. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who makes a pass at somebody? It's completely inappropriate. And we've an email about this. There's a scene in a later episode that provoked such a strong memory for me, something I'd buried for years. I went out for a drink with my best friend from school and her partner. It was a gorgeous day. I loved her. She meant so much to me. And she went to the toilet, and while she was away from the table, her partner told me in graphic detail what he wanted to do to me. I just sat there, frozen in shock. Writing this, I can still see the way he was looking at me and the way he spoke. She came back from the toilet. We carried on talking as if nothing had happened. It was so surreal. I doubted myself he'd said anything at all. Had I imagined it? So, she goes on to say, that scene in Riot Women, it was so, so deeply, deeply satisfying. I mean, you're absolutely right. Of course it has happened to absolutely everybody. And so many people as well just want to talk about Rosalie Craig. And that was a name I didn't know. How did you discover Rosalie, who plays one of the band members?
Well, I'd seen her on stage in Company. She played the lead in Company in 2018. Bobby. It's normally played by a man, but they did a gender reversal.
Yeah.
And I remember I remember writing a name down, thinking, no one must remember her. She was, you know, a kind of outstanding. And then when we started to cast, we realised we needed someone who really could sing. Because quite a lot of actors put on the CVs that they can sing, and they kind of can, but to really, really be able to belt like that is a real skill. So I asked her to come in and audition through Rachel, our casting director. And part of the audition was to sing Violet, the song that we end the show with, the Courtney Love song that we end the show with every time. And she came in and sang in front of me and Rowanna, who's my co-exec. And it was just extraordinary. It was, you know, to be in quite a small room with someone singing like that, it was, she kind of blew us away. And then she did the scenes, and she just really owned the character in a way that was very gratifying to think that somebody's put that much work in before they turn up to see us. So it was a very pleasing audition. You know, sometimes somebody walks into a room and they just own the part straight away, and you know you're gonna offer it to them. But you know, she wasn't a huge name. I mean, I hope she will be now. I hope her career is stellar.
I absolutely think she will be, definitely. Yeah. And to you as a writer, you've got a lot of confidence. I mean, of course you have. You've got a huge confidence in your ability, and you've had so much success. And you said earlier you've written all your life. Did you always know, I mean, don't be immodest, that you were properly, properly good?
I felt confident that I kind of knew what I was doing with writing. I don't know why. I'm not very confident about most things, but I think I always found a great pleasure in crafting words, right from being, you know, little, really. And I think I just never grew out of it. I think that's who writers are. I used to write plays with my sister, and I think she did it for quite a while. Like when we were little, like being 9, 10, 11, around then. And she kind of grew out of it and started to think it was a bit silly. And I just never thought it was silly. So I guess I got my 10,000 hours in, you know, quite soon.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
I don't know. And I was influenced. I used to read a lot of plays by Barry Keefe, and I started trying to write like him when I was in my teens. And I think that helps a lot because it was very succinct, very, very, very short sentences.
You'll have to just remind us who he was.
Barry Keefe is most famous for having written the screenplay of The Long Good Friday.
Right.
But he wrote a lot of stage plays in the 1970s. I went to see a play he wrote called Bastard Angel when I was 16. It was the first time I'd been to London. I was desperate to see theatre all week. And, I remember seeing that play at the... it was on at the Donmar when the RSC ran the Donmar Warehouse.
Right.
And it was quite, again, just a very sort of striking formative experience watching this quite edgy play that a 16-year-old probably shouldn't have been
acting. Were your parents okay with you touring London looking at theatre as a 16-year-old?
Well, I went with a friend and was staying with my cousin who was older than me, so we were sort of quite well looked after.
Okay.
But I think they knew I was very passionate about theatre. My parents never ever went to the theatre. It just wasn't on their list of things to do. They were very bookish. And my mum was really understood drama. You know, we'd watch telly and it wasn't passive at all. She was very analytical. We'd watch things like Coronation Street and really analyse it. You know, we weren't couch potatoes. We were very active.
Sally Wainwright talking about her active, not couch potato, adolescence watching The Box with her parents. All six episodes of Riot Women are on the iPlayer now. It is now 3:30 to 4.
In the ever-changing world of current affairs, nothing stands still. Times Radio Breakfast is your essential weekend briefing with incisive analysis on all the latest developments in politics, culture and entertainment. Plus all the latest financial news with the Weekend Money Check. Times Radio Breakfast with Chloe Tilley and Callum McDonald, Saturday and Sunday mornings from 6 on Times Radio with Handels Banken. Banking done differently since 1871. Find out why at handelsbanken.co.uk.
Listen to Times Radio on your DAB digital radio.
Cancer Research UK is funding the breakthroughs that matter. Did you know that over the past 50 years, their work has helped double cancer survival in the UK? Cancer Research UK science expert Dr. Sam Godfrey talks about the breakthroughs that could change the lives of people affected by cancer.
One of the breakthroughs that I'm so excited about is that our scientists discovered that the human papillomavirus actually caused almost all cervical cancers and a number of other cancers too. This has meant we've been able to develop a vaccine, and that is now expected to prevent almost 90% of cervical cancers in the UK. With screening as well, we think we're going to get to a point where we can stop almost all cervical cancers, and we're going to see a future where cervical cancer is effectively eradicated. It's such an exciting thing, and it just scratches the surface of what really is the golden age of research.
Witness more incredible research breakthroughs in Cancer Detectives Finding the Cures, brought to you by Cancer Research UK. Stream now on Channel 4. Cancer Research UK is a registered UK charity.
Strictly Come Dancing, the live tour, returns. Join the judges, Shirley Ballas, Anton Dubek and Craig Revel-Hornwood, and your host, Jeanette Monrara, for a dose of thoroughly feel-good entertainment. Strictly Come Dancing, the live tour, coming to an arena near you. Book your tickets now.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
So, Simon says, I love Riot Women. I thought it was a great show for men to watch. It was entertaining, it was thought-provoking and at times challenging. I recommend it to all men and women because I think, he says, it opens your eyes wider. And from Stephanie, I loved Riot Women. I didn't think it was lacking nice men. Well, Sally did say that certainly the man that the Tamsin Greg character met on a dating app turned out to be lovely in the end, although they had a slightly challenging first encounter, I think it's fair to say. And Josh says, Sally had some wonderful positive male characters in The Last Tango in Halifax. Also true. Anyway, I thought she answered that question very well. Those people concerned about it, or people who've never seen the show, I suggest you have a gander. Riot Women, all six episodes on the iPlayer now.
Our producer today was Felix Forbes. Our technical operator was Adam Heaton. Up next, it's John Pino with Drive. Enjoy your evening when you get to it.
across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Fee. Thank you, Jane. At 4 o'clock, I'm John Pienaar. This is Times Radio Drive, and here are the headlines. The Prime Minister's told Times Radio the two-child benefit cap has not been removed in order to please his MPs. And net migration fell by 69% in the year to June, down to 204,000 people. Coming up, we'll look at what's behind the latest migration figures and work out where they are going. And I'll have more analysis of the budget, talking to the former head of the Institute for Fiscal Studies. And later, I'll be talking live to the Culture Secretary, Lisa Nandy.
This is Times Radio.
Now the news with Tom Noonan.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon. Figures suggest asylum claims hit a record high in the year to September. Times Radio's Sinead Garvin has more.
Home Office figures show 110,000 people lodged asylum claims, 13% higher than the year before and 7% more than the previous peak in 2002. Nearly 36,300 asylum seekers were housed in hotels at the end of September. That's up almost a quarter since Labour took office and up 13% on June. However, it is lower than the peak of 56,000 in 2023.
Separate figures show net migration fell 69% for the year to June. That means asylum seekers make up 44% of net migration. The Prime Minister has told Times Radio ending the two-child benefit cap in the budget was not a last-minute measure to shore up his own position. Sir Keir Starmer insists he's always wanted to do it and it's not about keeping Labour MPs happy.
We've got hundreds of thousands of children living in poverty in modern-day Britain. Three-quarters of the families that they're living in are working families. This is the working poor in 2025 in Britain. We're putting an end to that.
The Prime Minister also says tax rises through freezing income tax thresholds are not to fund higher welfare spending, but to improve schools and hospitals. A seventh person has been arrested in connection with the terrorist attack on the Heaton Park Synagogue in Manchester last month. A 31-year-old was arrested on suspicion of preparing for an act of terrorism when he flew into Manchester Airport earlier. Vladimir Putin says Donald Trump's proposals agreed with Ukraine could be the basis for a future peace agreement. However, the Russian president says the government in Kyiv is illegitimate and it's senseless signing a deal with it. Ukrainian MP Bogdan Yeremenko told Times Radio that isn't a change in the Kremlin's position.
That's been hearing for some 4 years. So yeah. Russia is for the peace deal if it will be the capitulation of Ukraine. So they're ready to accept our surrender. At any moment, should we be ready to sign the capitulation? That's kind of peace deal that the Russian Federation is interested to discuss, nothing else.
President Putin says Donald Trump's envoy Steve Witkoff will travel to Moscow for more talks. The health secretary has written to GPs saying their union is misleading them and acting in an unprofessional way. West Streeting's in a dispute with the BMA over extending online tools which let patients contact their doctors. A BMA poll suggests 42% of practices have reduced face-to-face appointments as a result. US officials say the man who's been arrested on suspicion of shooting two National Guardsmen worked with the CIA in Afghanistan. The 29-year-old's Afghan's arrest in Washington, D.C. has prompted the federal government to suspend all immigration requests for other Afghans. And the world's largest bank, JP Morgan Chase, has announced plans to build a new £3 billion tower at Canary Wharf in East London. It'll house 12,000 staff. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, says it's a vote of confidence in the UK economy. For a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing podcast.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and via your smart speaker.
John Pienaar on Times Radio Drive with IG.
Hello, I'm John Pienaar with Drive on Times Radio. Thanks for joining me. Can winning an election by a landslide ever have felt as much like bad luck as it must surely feel for Keir Starmer and his Chancellor Rachel Reeves right now? Winning an impregnable majority of MPs in the Commons, only to have to give in to those MPs' demands for bigger benefit payments for larger families. Could the compassion for the less well-off, cited as the reason for scrapping the two-child benefit cap, carry a cost in votes? If and when Labour's opponents in Reform UK and the Conservatives tap into the anger of those paying more tax to pay for higher welfare. Now, migration control, another sore issue for many voters. Today, though, new figures show the level of net migration plummeting to 204,000, 80% down on the peak in 2023 and two-thirds down on the year. It is a huge drop. Now, we're talking, of course, about legal, regulated migration, not refugees and channel boats, which are very different things, even if they're often conflated in the minds of many members of the public. And true, a large part of the fall in immigration is owed to a change in visa rules under the last Conservative government. But this government has to get a handle on migration and asylum control. So let's try to find out what's going on and where is this trend heading. And crucially, between falling numbers and tougher policy, could migration and asylum ever be diffused as an explosive political issue? And even if it could, might any benefit to the government be cancelled out by the public's reaction to Labour's handling of welfare and the cost of living? See what I mean then about winning an election becoming a political curse as well as a wish come true. What do you think? What are your feelings on migration? What are your feelings on welfare spending? Send me a text, 87222, start with the word Times, or a tweet to @TimesRadio. I'm going to start with the new ONS figures from June 24 to 2025, down by more than two-thirds to reach the lowest annual level of migration since 2021. It's a drop of nearly 80% from that 2023 peak. And I can talk to Ben Brindle now from the Migration Observatory at Oxford University. Hello to you, Ben.
Afternoon, John.
Welcome to the programme, Ben. This drop in net migration, it looks pretty dramatic. Can you just get us through the main causes and influences behind that?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you've said, just a couple of years ago in 2023, net migration, which is the number of people coming to the UK minus the number of people leaving, was at a historic high. It was over 900,000. That's fallen significantly to 204,000 and is mainly a result of policies introduced by the previous Conservative government. So in early 2024, they announced a range of measures. Perhaps the ones which have had the biggest impact in the figures that we see today are they banned most international students from bringing their partners and children with them when they came to study. And they looked at applications to hire care workers more closely in light of reports of widespread exploitation in the sector.
Right, so we're talking about changes in the visa rules and as they bear on families. And also EU nationals leaving in the long aftermath of Brexit.
That's absolutely right. Yes. So at the end of 15 years of free movement, when we left the European Union, there was quite a large EU population in the UK. And so since then, we've had a net emigration of EU citizens, more EU citizens leaving. That's continued to now, but I don't think that we'll see it in the long term, because at some point, the EU citizens that will be left will be those who intend to stay in the UK for the long term. Then also on the immigration side, there's been quite a low take up of visas from EU citizens. I think it's likely that that could well increase in the years ahead too.
Okay. Now, when we're talking about the legal arrivals, as distinct from the irregular, the asylum seekers, the unlawful arrivals, we're talking about people who are, by definition, they're filling holes in the jobs market and therefore, you know, pulling their weight when it comes to the economy and economic growth.
Well, this is one of the quite interesting things about today's statistics. So if we cast our minds back a couple of years when we did have over 900,000 net migration, that was driven primarily by people coming to work and coming to study in the UK. But now, because those categories have fallen, while the number of asylum migration, while that number has stayed relatively constant,